Five Radio. Sir Tim Rice, the multi-award-winning and internationally renowned lyricist, he visits Cambridge with a very special live musical theatre event, My Life in Musicals. I know him so well. It's going to be on Sunday evening at the Cambridge Arts Theatre. And reflecting on his illustrious career, Tim will share anecdotes behind his songs, the hits and misses, along with stories of his life and live performances from a wonderful catalogue of songs. We are deeply privileged to be joined now by Tim Rice on Zoom. A very good evening to you, Sir Tim.
Hello there. How are you? Nice to hear you.
I'm very well. It's really kind of you to join us on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon. Now, you're coming to Cambridge Arts Theatre as part of your nationwide tour, and you clearly need no introduction for that at all. But for anyone lucky enough to have a ticket for the Cambridge event, what can they look forward to?
Well, it's me chatting about my life and times, which might be rather boring, except I am interrupted all the time by wonderful singers. I've got four singers, all West End veterans, and a band, and they sing the songs, most of which I hope the audience will know, because I assume that people coming to the show are interested in musical theatre and therefore would probably know a lot of the songs that we do. And I talk about how they got written. I talk about the composers I've worked with, because they're a pretty distinguished lot, starting with Andrew Lloyd Webber. Then there's Alan Menken, there's Elton John, there's Bjorn and Benny. I even do a song with Gary Barlow that people might not have heard before, but most of the songs are very well known. And it seems to work. We had a trial run last year with four shows, a bit under the radar. We didn't want to do too much publicity in case it didn't work, but people love hearing how songs get created, often by accident.
Now, you must have so many great career memories and have collaborated, obviously, with so many amazing people. Is it possible to pick out a couple of highlights from your career?
Well, yeah, I suppose it is. I mean, the thing is, I don't have a formal script. The songs, of course, are all rehearsed and we know what songs are coming up. But I ramble through aspects of my life and the songs, and no two shows are exactly the same, which the singers love. They say it's great because we really listen. I mean, we know we won't get the same stuff every night. I mean, sometimes, obviously, there are some stories I probably do tell almost every night. But it's hard to say about a highlight. I suppose if I was to be asked the highlight of my career, it would probably be the opening night of Evita, because that was really the second big hit we had. And we kind of felt that after that we'd prove that we weren't one-hit wonders with Superstar.
Yeah, and that that writing partnership with Andrew Lloyd Webber must be one of the most significant collaborations in music theatre of the late 20th century. So how did that evolve for you?
Well, I was very lucky. I was hawking around a song or two I'd written, but really not to be a songwriter, to show off my voice. I'd had a pop group at school and I used to sing. It was way back in the Cliff Richard and the Shadows days, and pre-Beatles. But by the time I left school, the Beatles and the Stones were all going strong. And I thought, I wouldn't mind seeing if I can get a few gigs singing anyway. And I was a law student and I made a couple of demos, but I didn't want to sing other people's songs because I wouldn't sound as good as Mick Jagger, or I wouldn't sound as good as John Lennon. So I wrote a couple of songs which nobody else had done. Therefore, I was the best singer ever of these songs. And I sent this tape off to various record companies and got no response for quite a while. And then I got a call from a music publisher saying, did you write, is that Tim Rice? And I said, yes. He said, we've got this tape. Who wrote the songs? And I said, well, I did. And I said, what did you think of the vocal? He said, not much. And I said, oh, fine, because it was the songs I wanted to sell, which is totally untrue. But one of the songs got recorded by a group called The Night Shift. It wasn't a hit, but it was great to get a record out just on a genuine piece of plastic. And through hawking my songs around, I met one or two other people in the publishing and the music business. And one of them was actually a book publisher primarily, said to me, I know a young man called Andrew Lloyd Webber who is keen to write in musical theatre. And that intrigued me, because even though I was more into rock and roll and pop, I did know a lot about the songs of musical theatre because my parents had a very good album collection. but I'd never really been to more than a couple of shows in my life. Anyway, I went to meet Andrew, and I was pretty convinced after about 20 minutes hearing him at the piano that he was going to make it. And he was even more convinced than I was that he was going to make it. And he said, I'm really looking for someone to write lyrics. Would you be interested? And I gave it a go, and it worked. It didn't instantly work. The first musical we wrote didn't really, I mean, it was actually, the songs were quite good, the music particularly, but it wasn't a very good story. And it taught me early on that story is king. And then when we wrote our second piece together, which was Joseph, turned out to be Joseph, it was such a strong story, and we were inspired by it, I think. And we only were doing it for one school to begin with, but it was great to know we were going to get it performed, even if it was just by a school. And one thing led to another. Joseph was well received. Then we got a decent management, and the first thing we did with them was Jesus Christ Superstar.
And taking Joseph. I mean, kids absolutely love it, and quite understandably. I mean, I did it when I was at school, and coming back to it as an adult, I think you appreciate a whole extra layer of comedy and subtlety to it all. Is that something you consciously set out to achieve, or is that just a sort of a product of your brilliance, the two of you?
Well, it's very kind of you to suggest the latter. Well, it's very interesting you should say that, because you picked up exactly on the reason, in a way, why I think Joseph works for more than one generation, because it does work on a kid's level. The same is true of The Lion King, really.
Yeah.
The songs work as fun entertainment for kids, but they also work on a different level, certainly parts of the songs, for adults. And if you can hit more than one generation at once, you're in with a fighting chance, especially if you've got good tunes. And I always likened this phenomenon, if that's what it is, to My Fair Lady, which was one of the first albums I played of my parents' collection when I was about 11. And there's a song in it called I'm Getting Married in the Morning. It's actually called Get Me to the Church on Time.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's I'm Getting Married in the Morning. And I thought it was a song about getting married in the morning when I was 11, which it is. But when you grow up a bit and you realize what the lyrics are really saying, it's I want one more night of behaving appallingly, and this, that, and the other. And it's a very funny song on two levels, and it can be related to both by adults and by youngsters. I think the same is true with Joseph. I've never shied away with anything to write down to children. I sometimes use long words like fratricide or strange expressions like beyond the pale, which children might not know and certainly wouldn't use. But and I did one in The Lion King. Quid pro quo is in the villain's song, and some people say, well, children won't know what that means. And I said, no, but they'll find out. You know, this yeah. will be something they'll want to know what it means. And so one doesn't want to be too clever, but at the same time, I think you want the characters, particularly if they're adult characters, just to speak in adult language, but something that will work at all levels. So you picked up on a pretty good point there.
Now, I'm guessing that some composers will want to start the life cycle of a song with the music, and others may want to start with the words. Is that something you've had to adapt your craft with and flex around with over the years for different collaborators?
Well, yes, exactly. But before words or music, if you're writing a musical, the key thing is the story. You've got to have a good story. It can be a real story, like Eva Peron or Joseph, or it can be a made-up story, like Chess, which I did with the ABBA boys. But it's got to be a good story. It's got to be a story that has characters that are believable. And I often quote as an example of, I mean, great. What I'm saying is great music, great lyrics on their own won't necessarily sell it. But if you've got a good basic tale to tell, you can often get away with, I'm not saying you should, but a great story is often more important than great music and lyrics. That sounds a strange thing to say. Obviously, both being good is ideal, but if you take a great album like Sgt. Pepper by the Beatles, there have been quite a few attempts to make that into a theatrical musical, and indeed into a film. There was a film made of it, and they didn't really work, because brilliant though the songs are, it's not really a plot. There's no real story in it. You can force a story around those wonderful songs, but it's not really quite going to work as an entity, other than as a brilliant gramophone record.
At your tour events, I imagine that everybody will be singing along to these songs because they know and love them. What does it feel like just to have the whole world singing along to a song that you've written?
Well, I'm not sure the whole world does, but if
it's just not far off.
The punters in Cambridge to sing along, that'd be great. It's quite funny because we usually end up with Any Dream Will Do, which everybody seems to know that because that's been around almost the longest of any of my songs. And there's a bit in it where they go, and everybody answers the phrase, I close my eyes and, you know, and...
drew back the curtain.
Yeah, drew back the words. But, you know, and it's, and a lot of people say, oh, I love the oohs and the ahs in Any Dream Will Do. That's my favourite bit. And I think, yeah, but that's the only bit I didn't write. I wrote the lyrics, but the brilliant arranger of the first album or the choir master when the kids were with the kids put in, But that's a song that everybody sings along. But they all love doing the answering phrases. That's fun. They also like singing along to Hakuna Matata. That's one they love singing along to.
I bet. So now I appreciate that our time is drawing to a close, Sir Tim. So just a few final thoughts. I mean, do you think the UK musical theatre scene is in a good state of health at the moment?
Well, there's certainly a lot of shows coming out all the time. So I would say the answer is yes. I haven't really seen enough. Scene Six, which I thought was very good and very original and short, which is a good thing.
Yes, it's brilliant, isn't it, Six?
Yeah, including some of mine are a bit too long at times. But and of course Hamilton, which is not British, is another brilliant show. But no, I think there's some very good shows bubbling around and a lot of very promising writers. So I would say it is quite healthy. It's interesting because people never know. And I certainly don't, where the next big hit is coming from. It's always something slightly unexpected, as I think Six was. Six began in Edinburgh Festival, really, and was a sort of student-y thing.
Yeah.
But at every level, it was liked, which is rather like what happened with Joseph. We wrote it for kids, and in the end, it was the Edinburgh Festival that kicked it into gear.
And it was written by youngsters, of course, themselves. So if you're a youngster who is passionate about music theatre, do you have any advice? What would you say to the young Sir Tim trying to make their way today in the industry?
Well, I have been doing a thing on the BBC called Maestro, in which I waffle on about my 10 golden rules. And one of them I've been talking to you about is have a good story. But I think one of the rules, funnily enough, is nobody knows anything. And if you know you don't know anything, you're ahead of the game. But by that, I'm not being totally facetious. I'm saying that there are no hard and fast rules. And every big hit that's ever happened has been rejected by almost everybody. I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar, nobody wanted to stage it in the theatre. So we did it as an album, which was a second choice, except it turned out to be a brilliant way of promoting the work. And we were able, on record, in the studio, to use much bigger and more exciting forces than we could have done in a theatre at that time. So that was forced upon us. But we didn't set out to say, I've got a brilliant idea, let's make a record, and then hope that gets turned into a show. Because in those days, that wasn't a thing that people did. And, albums barely existed in you know, pre-1950 anyway. Although we were a bit later than that, I hasten to add. But there's no hard and fast rule for creating something, except you've got to believe in it, you've got to have a good story, and I would always advise anybody writing a musical starting out to get it performed live. Producers don't really want to hear recordings or CDs or streaming of something. They don't mind hearing it, but they'll leave it on their desk for ages. Whereas if you can get somebody to come out and see a live show and get an audience reaction, it will teach you a lot about your work, and it will teach producers, they'll say, hang on, the audience like this, maybe I should go into this one.
And we should finish by talking briefly maybe about your love of cricket, which is, I think, well documented, isn't it? Probably some synergies with the theatre in a game of cricket, just maybe?
Yes, you can go on a bit too heavily about this, but cricket is very theatrical. It's no coincidence that an awful lot of theatre people, not just musical theatre, love cricket. It's like the drama of, the batsman is a kind of star when he's in. As soon as he's out, of course, he's not. But you've got two guys out there centre stage against a crowd of people who are determined to bring them down. It's all quite, you can over-dramatise and make the similarities, but there is something very theatrical about cricket, perhaps more than other great games like football, which is, you know, over quite quickly compared with, well, actually it's not these days, there's so many fast cricket games. So I'm old fashioned, I prefer the 5-day slog.
Even if they end in a draw.
Yeah, especially if it ends in a draw. That's, life is about ending in a draw if you're lucky.
Okay. Tim Rice, My Life in Musicals, I Know Him So Well, is touring to the Cambridge Arts Theatre on the evening of Sunday, the 28th of April, 2024. It means so much to us, Sir Tim, for you joining us and taking the time out of your really busy schedule this afternoon. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much and best of luck with your tour.
Well, you're very kind and I appreciate you giving up your time. So thanks a lot.